Okay, I'm Western Carolina University Master's in Entrepreneurship student Bill Miller here on July 23rd, 2012, looking to gain marketing and public relations insights for entrepreneurs from Amanda Wetstein, APR, CPRC. The APR and CPRC designations mean that she's a true expert in public relations, which she specializes in, along with mixed media marketing and internet marketing. Ms. Wetstein currently serves as Director of Strategic Alliances for that company, which is a global marketing company ranked on the Inc. 500 as one of the fastest growing private companies in the United States. Prior to that, she was an entrepreneur, having had her own PR firm for 7 years. So she's an excellent person to interview on these topics, and we're doing the interview in person and recording it with an audio recorder. Okay, Ms. Wetstein, are you ready to begin?
I am ready.
Okay, Ms. Wetstein, please describe what you do, both for that company and for your clients.
Well, I was recently changed in January of 2012 from Public Relations Director to Director of Strategic Alliances, and every time I say that, I feel like it's a little bit of a Star Wars title. So basically, I wear two hats there. One is I still am our current public relations director for our company and for our clients, but I am also in charge of strategic alliances, which is building partnerships with other traditional media agencies out there to build kind of referral relationships. A lot of traditional advertising agencies haven't gotten into the digital world yet. And so we provide services for them, sometimes as a private label acting as their company. So it's up to me to develop and foster those relationships as well.
Interesting. So what is a typical workday like for you?
I typically get started pretty early. A lot of times, because we're on East Coast time, a lot of things that I have pending from the West Coast kind of come in overnight or after close. So I try to get an early start and work on anything that's come in overnight. I try to split my day up between handling the PR for current clients that we're overseeing their public relations strategies for, and then during the day I also will respond to and work on our strategic partnership development. It gets kind of crazy because I don't control my own schedule. Many people from within my company can control my own schedule, and so a lot of times what I think my day is going to be like, it's changing all the time, and sometimes that can be frustrating. You know, I don't know that I have a meeting that's popped up or something like that, so I'm constantly switching back between business development and PR, so that can be kind of tricky.
But keeps things interesting too, right?
It does. There's never a dull moment.
For sure.
That's true.
Will you please describe a key mistake or two that you've seen startups or small businesses make with regard to either marketing or PR in general?
Yeah, as soon as I, you know, knew that I was going to have to answer that question, I knew immediately, because I see this all the time. Kind of the analogy that I use is a small business or a startup. I kind of liken it to, you know, building a house. They're going to launch a business, they want to build a business, but what happens is they do not plan a marketing or advertising or PR budget for 12 full months. And so what happens is they'll launch this business, whether it's an internet marketing business model or a more traditional business model, whatever the company is, they'll build this beautiful house, and then there's no budget to attract the people to it, if that analogy makes sense. So launching the business is, you know, the building of the house part, but then planning a marketing budget for 12 months, you know, and looking at your business and your pro forma, you know, at what point are we expecting kind of a return on investment? But I see it time and time again, businesses who don't plan for full marketing, advertising, and public relations for 12 months. So they've got this beautiful building built, if you will, and no people coming to it, and no means or methods to attract them to it.
Excellent answer. How about successes? What marketing or PR commonalities have you seen successful startups and small businesses? What do they typically have?
First of all, the success I see, again, speaking from my area, which is typically, you know, the PR, is that all businesses obviously need public relations. Of course, I'm going to say that. But not everybody understands the difference between marketing, PR, and advertising. And they don't understand that PR and advertising fit under the components of a marketing plan. PR and advertising are kind of tools and tenets by which you're orchestrating your marketing. And so, again, not understanding that and not planning for and budgeting, you know, activities associated with, you know, how you're going to make money, and the tools that you're going to make money with have to come from your marketing. Marketing is also different from sales, and I see that mistake a lot. So I really go in and instruct everybody. You're calling me for PR. You might want to be talking about advertising, but advertising and marketing and sales are all completely different disciplines. And then a lot of times public relations gets lost on the sideline because people don't understand the value of building those relationships with the publics that you serve. And oftentimes small companies don't understand that they're serving multiple audiences, multiple target audiences, you know, whether that's media, your shareholders, your clients, your customers, your employees. You have all of these different mediums that you have to message to. The messages are often different, and the way you message to them will often be different. So a lot of times I don't see a tremendous grasp or understanding of the various disciplines and the way we're going to communicate to them.
And I take it that's something that your firm specializes in, and intertwining all those elements together.
It is. And, you know, another mistake I see, you know, using my lingo and from my discipline perspective is, you know, branding. I think a lot of people think that branding might be a bunch of hooey, but every company has its own culture. Even if you're a one-man band out of your garage, well, perhaps that's part of your brand, or perhaps maybe that's not the brand that you want to portray. So a brand really is a living, breathing thing. It is not just a logo. And a lot of times small companies without a lot of budget think, okay, here's my new logo and I'm going to put it on a website. Boom, I have a brand. And that's not it at all. There's a lot of effort that should go into growing and protecting your brand, establishing your brand. You know, what is your brand voice? You know, I'm working with a large credit union in Central Florida right now who wants to target 18 to 34-year-olds. Well, they keep messaging like they're trusted advisors and advocates. So an 18 to 34-year-old, if you message to them from that standpoint, is going to be thinking maybe of their trusted uncle or grandfather, when what now they want trusted to sound like is a Tim Tebow voice, if you see the difference in talking to kind of an 18 to 34-year-old. So when we're working on their brand, that's the types of things that we're working on.
Very interesting. I love the Tebow reference.
Yeah, I'm sure you do.
Is there a relatively inexpensive marketing tool that most startups should utilize but often don't?
Still currently in this economy and in the world, what we're seeing still is best bang for the buck right now is still, you know, direct mail. Believe it or not, direct mail still has a great impact, as well as cable television. So if a client comes to me and they have a message they want to put out, they want to do some PR, and they have a budget for which we can do some paid messaging, we're going to look at direct mail, we're going to look at cable. Cable TV, we can really hone in on demographics. For instance, I can tell you in cable who's bought tires in your area for the last 12 months and what stations they're watching and, you know, that type of thing. So I know we're getting into advertising a little bit, but cable and direct mail, still the biggest bang for the buck. Cable is your cheapest medium, but also social media. And the thing I see about social media is businesses will pop up a Facebook profile. A lot of times they're still trying to use a friends page and they're attracting friends. And Facebook is very adept at finding that and banning you. So what I see in the client space with social media is a lot of small businesses are absolutely convinced in this day and age they've got to have social media. Well, maybe you do, maybe you don't. And an example of that is we had CEO of a bubble wrap manufacturer several months ago contact us who was just hell-bent that he needed to be in the social media space. Well, really, if you're in bubble wrap manufacturing, what are your goals and objectives? So we really try to, with small companies who are going to do some type of social media, talk about their conversion points. What are their messages? Are we doing it to build brand awareness? Are we building it to get a conversion? Is that a sale? Is that a phone call? Is that we're going to drive them to the website? So what are your goals and objectives in using social media? And I also ask small companies, you know, are you doing, for instance, a quarterly newsletter or a monthly email newsletter? Because if you can't even manage that process, you're going to have a very hard time managing updated and relevant content in the social media space. So social media is definitely something that, for the most part, can be free, but you have to know how to use it effectively.
Very good. We're reading the book, Likeable Social likable as social media, and it's offered some of the same points that you have, so that's nice to have confirmation of that. For an open-ended question, do you have a favorite marketing or PR story that you'd like to share?
I mean, this is just something, again, that's personal to my history and my career, but, you know, for a long time I worked for the Florida Department of Law Enforcement up in Tallahassee at the main headquarters. And Florida Department of Law Enforcement is like our state FBI, if you will. But up there, Tallahassee is home to the state crime lab. Now, there's various crime labs around, you know, some of the counties that they serve, various regional crime labs, but Tallahassee is home to the big one. So major crimes, serial killers, you know, that type of stuff, that's all run out of Tallahassee. And for me, back in the early 90s, mid-90s to late 90s, we were really, you know, DNA was really, had really started coming into its own. Florida was one of the first national leaders to actually have a DNA database. And so very quickly, Florida became one of the first states that would constantly submit DNA profiles from crimes. And we would invariably get, you know, a hit off a cold case. Florida was one of the first leaders in that. So to be able to do public relations and media relations on cold cases that were sometimes 20, 25 years old, by being, you know, first in the country to have such a widespread DNA database, and it led to my first in my career, my first big media hit. It's just when 48 Hours came down and spent several days with us watching our crime labs work and watching our DNA profilers submit data, looking for a hit that was going to come back, and really getting to introduce not only to Florida but the nation, not only the power of a DNA database, but, you know, that Florida was a thought leader and had invested in this, and the results for a family to maybe get that closure, get a criminal off the street who had been a repeat offender but hadn't gotten caught yet just from simply, you know, a DNA profile. That was an amazing career high point for me.
That's pretty cool. How about describing a challenge or two that you face in your job or in the industry?
For me, there's really two. One is, I see this all the time, you mentioned, you know, APR and CPRC. Accredited in public relations means, you know, from our Public Relations Society of America, our big national association, PR practitioners 5 years or more can sit for their accreditation in public relations. And there's a lot that goes into that, but all told, it's like an 18-month process. There's only 4,500 of us in the world. CPRC is certified in public relations counseling, and I'm one of only 70 in the state of Florida. So what I see for me are inexperienced practitioners who are giving advice, whether it's to a small client or a nonprofit organization, who maybe are not as experienced and haven't demonstrated it through professional accreditation, which is kind of like our becoming a CPA, if you will, or, you know, it's the highest level that we can achieve. So really, I have seen many, many times where somebody who is perhaps just a marketing major can call themselves a public relations practitioner. And a lot of people kind of jumping in and calling themselves PR professionals because it's an easy hat to throw on, and anybody terms themselves a PR consultant. So I always caution companies, whether they're going to hire my company, hire me or anything, look for the accreditation, look for a demonstrated history. You know, at that level, if you are a polished and experienced public relations practitioner, you should be able to give case studies. You should be able to give examples of your body of work and successes, you know, budgeted or not. The other thing that I deal with a lot of times are actual marketing directors for companies who tend to feel threatened if their CEO or somebody directs them or they've got an agency budget. They tend to sometimes get threatened, like, we want their jobs. And all I can say is, we don't want your jobs. You know, we're there to support you. We're there to make your company look good and accomplish your goals and objectives. And we're there to be part of your team. And so sometimes when you're working with a marketing director who does feel threatened or isn't thrilled about working with an agency, that can be really tough to get anything accomplished.
Very interesting. These are things I hadn't thought of before. What about changes or emerging trends that you may have seen in marketing or PR that might be helpful for entrepreneurs to either embrace or at least be aware of?
I think the first thing is, one of the big emerging trends I see, is that Whether, again, we're talking a small company, nonprofit, large company, like some of the Inc. 500s that I'm blessed to be able to work with, is they're finally putting public relations at the management table. Meaning, PR can now report directly to senior VPs, EVPs, and CEOs rather than somewhere down here in middle management. And PR should be at the management table. It's critical decision-making and strategy all the time. Companies, no matter how big or how small, have multiple touch points, and it should be part of their overall business plans. It should be part of their overall goal setting and strategies, and it should be part of their strategic plans. So I'm seeing that as an emerging trend, finally, that these companies are finally putting PR at the management table. Another emerging trend that I really see is the use of digital and internet in public relations. It's not just a standard news release anymore. Media markets are crazy. So how you use public relations with all the digital tools that are available, probably the biggest emerging trend that we see is mobile, mobile, mobile. It used to be websites, and it still is, but now it's going to mobile websites. And for instance, we know that 68% of all African Americans and Latinos in the marketplace get their news, do most of their shopping, do all of their communications off smartphones or iPhones, not even just computers anymore. So any company that's not really looking seriously at mobile and how strategic and how demographically targeted we can be in mobile in the use of PR probably needs to really take a look at that too.
Very interesting. How about social media and marketing? Is Facebook really going to rule the world, or where do you see social media trending?
Yeah, Facebook's a player, and one of the things we're observing for the last 2 years is that Facebook has been the most searched URL, beating Google. Google, of course, is not happy about that. And so if you think about Facebook likes and, you know, like, Google's response to that has been the plus ones. I don't know if you've seen that, which is really their attempt. Google's,
they haven't caught on as much yet.
They haven't, and Google's personal fear is that Facebook somehow decides to make itself its own search engine. But Facebook is definitely the social media choice still. As you know, social media, like last year, Pinterest popped up. You know, Foursquare is now out there. So it's so hard because a lot of times your fans, your followers, your likes, whatever, you can dilute them by being in too many social media outlets. We still traditionally stick to the big four. We will occasionally add some Foursquare into there if we've got a retail location and you can do like a check-in special or something like that. But Facebook, even last week, they continue to get more targeted in terms of marketing data they're returning to us. So for instance, you're on Facebook and you're newly engaged. But if I'm doing a social media campaign, I already would know that about you. Facebook is now able to tell me how many kids you have, what are their ages, what do they like. So not only can I market to your kids on Facebook, I can market to the parent decision makers, and we can market this through all of your personal data that you're giving us on your profile. This is information you're giving up freely that now we can say, I need to reach, again, car owners 18 to 34, perhaps in the market. You know, that type of thing. So Facebook is getting extremely targeted in the marketing data we can get from information that you're sharing.
Right. Like, you consider Facebook the dominant player, right?
Facebook is the dominant player.
And you mentioned the big four, Facebook, Twitter, and what would be the other two?
LinkedIn and YouTube. We also know in terms of content, you message to people in different ways. So some people are auditory, some people are oral. So what we're seeing is also the emergence of video, which somebody like our company would then take and optimize. So YouTube is definitely emergent too in terms of being able to sell. And we see all types of technologies that call to our company and want us to sell. For instance, before, if you were in YouTube and somebody put out some type of video, you were watching it, if you wanted to buy that product or service, you had to back out of YouTube and go to the website. And we're calling in our world, that's a step out of the conversion process. We want conversions to be seamless. So now there's shopping cart technologies that while you're watching this video in YouTube, they've embedded shopping cart ability right there. So while you're actually watching the video, you can make your purchase decision. You can have them sign that petition if it's some type of PR initiative. So you can keep seeing how entrepreneurial companies come up with things, you know, to continue to make whatever your conversion is that you're looking for seamless and right there without having to back out and go to multiple steps.
That's pretty cool. I'm on the internet a lot, and YouTube not a ton, but I haven't seen that yet, but I'll
it's
be looking for
Sensei,
it.
Sinsay, sensei.com
okay.
is the one that we talked with last week.
Interesting. Okay, speaking of entrepreneurs, what skills in particular do you think entrepreneurs need to have in order to be successful?
You know, we talk to a lot of people, you know, because we're an Inc. 500 internet marketing social media company, so we hear from a lot of entrepreneurs who want, you're developing this app or, you know, whatever it is. So one thing we see is a lot of people, again, like I just said, people call themselves PR people. People are calling themselves entrepreneurs. So what does really an entrepreneur look like? You know, for us, obviously, you know, they're a risk taker. You know, we see that time and time again. What we don't see in them is perhaps a lot of organization. Entrepreneurs tend to fly by the seat of their pants, and just using our company as an example, they'll call our CEO and think they're going to get that appointment because they've got this great idea. We see 100 great ideas a month in there of people who are calling and selling. So they still have to be somewhat traditional in terms of having a pro forma, having a business plan, putting a budget together. And it's very hard sometimes for an entrepreneur to take all of this in their heads that's circulating around and put it down in a way that in the business world is going to make sense. Am I making sense when I say that?
Entrepreneurs are idea people. We like to come up with the good ideas and focus on that. And the business is secondary, but that's what we're learning.
Exactly. And they have to know also when to shift. And an entrepreneur sometimes is either surrounded by sycophants and yes men who don't want to really come at the entrepreneur hard and say, maybe we need to do this and have you ever thought of this? Because sometimes an entrepreneur can be very one-track minded. So we see that a lot, and they don't know when to shift or make an adjustment because it's kind of their way or the highway oftentimes is what we'll see. But I think a good entrepreneur is also confident, but not egoistic. And oftentimes, I'll see entrepreneurs that have all this ego because this is a badass idea. And there's a difference between egoistic and confidence. I think especially if you are an entrepreneur with an idea that you've got to go sell to somebody or license or whatever it is. So understand the difference between being confident in yourself as an entrepreneur and your ideas and not egoistic.
Can have sound business plans behind that great idea too.
Yes.
Is there one particular thing that entrepreneurs need to have in order to be successful, in your opinion?
Yes, and that's focus. The other thing that I have seen in my career dealing with entrepreneurs and having been one, like you said, myself owning my own firm, is that there's always, again, the stuff circulating in their heads, and they are sometimes have this idea and they're in the process of enacting this idea, trying to get this idea off the ground, but they're always off on the next idea. They're always sometimes can't turn their minds off. They get very ethereal and they can't stay focused on this one situation to fruition. Even at my company with my CEO, entrepreneur, boss, he's throwing this out and we're going to go down that path. And then the following month, it's going to be this idea and we're going to go down that path. So oftentimes there's a lot of ideas, there's a lot of talking, but very little of that strategic focused business. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes. So you actually have to rein your boss in a little bit on some of his ideas?
Yes. Or we'll all say, you know, enough with the talking. Let's pick one thing and see that to fruition because he's got the next best idea. And they're all great ideas, but at some point you have to put that to paper and figure out your research, your planning, your implementation, and evaluation of that idea before you're off on another snowball.
Right, you got to get it going before you can start something else.
Yes.
Last question, is there any particular piece of advice that you'd like to give aspiring entrepreneurs?
I think it's don't try to be a jack of all trades, if you will. If you're an entrepreneur and you've got this product, you've got this business, you've got this service, you need good financial people around you. You need good marketing people around you. You need good business and strategic people around you. None of us are really experts in all of these facets of business and industry. So surround yourself with good people as you can afford to and you have the time to. It's also listen. Because anybody that you are retaining or consulting with or hiring, they're really there to support you. And so I see that a lot. Again, you're warning them, you're giving them best advice, and they're not great listeners. Entrepreneurs tend to not be great listeners in many cases. So that's one thing I would say is, you know, don't try to be a jack of all trades. You know, you have your one focused idea or whatever it is you're trying to bring to life. Surround yourself with good people and let them, you know, lift you up in pursuing, you know, whatever entrepreneurial path you're going down.
Excellent. I think you've shared some fantastic insights, and thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome. So,